Hello, everybody. Welcome to another episode of Pseudo Intellectual Live, and a special hello if you are watching live on the Lauren Chen YouTube channel. Quick reminder for people who also like listening to podcasts, this show is available wherever you get your podcasts. So definitely like, subscribe, give us a good rating, all of that amazing stuff. Today, we have a guest that I'm sure a lot of you are already following. If you're not, you can find his links down in the description, but we have none other than Nerdrotic, also known as Gary, I guess, in the IRL world. Gary, it's so great to talk to you. Thank you for coming on. This is going to be such a fun show.
Thanks for inviting me on, Lauren. It's a pleasure and it's an honor.
Well, I mean, we've been on streams together for Friday Night Tights, your amazing just smash hit show that anytime I tune in, I'm always amazed the numbers who are watching live keep growing. It's definitely well-deserved. But for people who aren't yet familiar with you, you do a lot of amazing commentary and reviews in the pop culture sphere. So you're basically one of my go-tos if I want to know what I should or should not watch, what's going on in the world of entertainment, all the latest amazing stuff. For people who haven't followed, you know, your origin story, would you mind talking a little bit about how you got into YouTube? Because I know you're someone, you used to own a comic book store, right?
That is true. That is true. You might have heard that. I'll try to do the Cliff Notes version. So, yes, back from 2003 to 2013, I owned a comic store in San Francisco. I am a grateful recovering addict. I fell off the wagon towards the end of that because ego and hubris got the best of me. And I had to sell the store to Brian Hibbs for basically a song. And I had to rebuild my life. And when part of doing that would be, hey, I still want to stay connected, because one of my favorite things about the shop was sitting behind the counter and BSing with all of the customers. So I started a podcast with my friend, never, ever believing that anybody would ever listen to it outside of my mom, which ironically enough, my mom never listened. We just started, you know, shooting the crap about, I think in the first one, we were talking about like Batman versus Superman. We did it in a Starbucks in West Portal in San Francisco. I got my first sponsor. A dude sitting next to us felt sorry for us and gave us $5. I told us to shout him out. From there, it built. Hosts come and go. I was working day jobs. And then, Last Jedi happens and Doctor Who happens kind of within a year. I get more traction from Doctor Who because I had this controversial take that the Doctor's just a man. It's always going to be a man. It was a man. You could try all these other things, but it will never work. And a lot of people believe that, but within the Doctor Who fandom, they felt like they couldn't say it, which I thought was insane. But it turns out like there's a lot of things you couldn't say in fandom anymore that you could say a year before, 2 years before. So, you know, the channel got traction. I met Jeremy from Geeks and Gamers and we formed Friday Night Tights, this little show where we could just basically hang out and BS, kind of like I did in the comic store, and it turned into a thing. But like those conversations we have on Friday Night Tights are the exact same ones I had in my comic shop. I also made videos, got hired Quarter Black Garrett from Crowder. I stole him. No, actually I didn't. But Perry Chan came along. He was just a guy making memes for Friday Night Tights. I'm like, hey, you're pretty good. Why don't you jump on and be an editor? And from there, you know, with those two guys coming in and then X-Ray Girl coming in as the producer, and now we have Lady Greymaster as a researcher, it's just turned into this thing that I never thought it would turn into. We just passed 1 million, which was insane. It's surreal. I don't know how to even react to it, but it's thank you for saying I'm your go-to. I don't know how good that is for pop culture in the world, but that's the quick story. I'm writing a book. So
what? That's so exciting. Can you say what it's about? Like, is it going to be something fiction or nonfiction?
It is nonfiction. It is going to be basically a recovery story, a story about sobriety, recovery, and how hopefully it could, not be inspirational, but show you like, that you could be at the bottom, like almost dead. And in my case, twice flatline dead, and wow, still come back and have a life, you know, and have a good functioning, joyful life. It's possible.
I definitely would be interested in reading that. And it's so amazing seeing what you've built, not just in terms of the numbers, because obviously the channel is thriving, but also the community. I don't know if you guys have hung out on Friday Night Tights live streams, if you're familiar with, you know, the whole gang on there, but it's positive, it's fun, it's jovial, it's creative as well. You know, you have people like Eric July who are building things. Like everyone's got projects, I guess, beyond just being in videos, it seems. And it's such a great group of people. So you should feel really proud about that. I'm not trying to flatter you, but it's really awesome. And it's one of my favorite corners of the internet right now, because I don't know if you get it. So I do pop culture videos as well. And I'm pretty critical of most of the stuff that I review. I hear people say that I'm too negative, which is maybe the case, but I watch your content and it doesn't feel negative. Like, you might be criticizing woke stuff, but I still come away with the vibe that it's a positive video. I don't know if that even makes sense.
Well, my friend, like old time nerds will know this, that anytime we went to a movie, because I used to go to a movie every Friday, like every Friday for the 90s, pretty much every Friday, Saturday, I was in the movie theater and with my friends. And even if we liked it, we're roasting it and we're roasting each other, because that's kind of what dudes do. But we keep it fun, and we went because we loved it. Like that was, you know, we worked our 9 to 5. Some of us are 2 jobs a day, and our one little slice of joy, you know, after working for the man was going to a movie theater, buying a comic book. And guys, you know, we roast each other all the time. So, but we try to keep it light. It's kind of a light roasting. But like, we love this stuff. We want it to be better. That's ultimately what we want it to be. But I'm not going to hold back, like, you know, roasting Rebel Moon, because it's just objectively terrible, which everybody thinks now. I mean, that's not just like a side that thinks that. It's pretty much everybody. Right. And yeah, I try to keep it funny. Like, I don't always succeed. I will be the first to admit it, that some of the jokes don't land. But, you know, those who try the most fail the most.
Right. No, that's very well put. And speaking of failing, let's talk a little bit about Doctor Who. So people who are familiar with your channel, you're true Whovian, you know the franchise. It's gone downhill in the past little bit, I think it's pretty safe to say. I've always been really, really casual when it comes to Doctor Who. I don't consider myself a huge Doctor Who fan. But at the same time, I remember when the news broke that it was going to be a female Doctor Who, I thought immediately that was strange. And, you know, actually having seen the episodes, people who complain that, oh, it's just anti-woman hatred, I don't think they appreciate how, even without the casting choice, those are just some of the wokest episodes of Doctor Who imaginable. Like the actual writing, you know, they're talking about racial politics, gender politics. It's beyond just a casting choice. Why do you think this keeps happening? Because we have a new doctor who's been announced, a black queer male this time. So it's no longer a female. Actually, maybe who knows what gender identity, you know, we're going to end up with here. But we now have the doctor who's saying, here we go, there's so much white mediocrity that gets celebrated. Let me not be a boomer and actually pull it up. There we go. Mm-hmm. There's so much white mediocrity that gets celebrated, and black people have to be absolutely flawless to get half of that anyway. We're trained to be like, if I'm not exceptional, I won't be loved. I think I'm just learning now. You're allowed to be loved. You don't have to be excellent or aspire to that term. Is that ever a positive mindset to go in? You don't have to be great anyway.
No.
Right? No. It's like, it's okay.
And I hate to break it to you, you don't deserve love from maybe your mom, but right. From the world, you earn it. It's like respect.
He says basically the opposite. I'm slowly training myself out of that and being like, no, you deserve love just for existing. And that has taught me to be a lot more loving as well in a weird way.
It's not alive anymore. Tell that to Ted Bundy. He deserved love for existing.
Is this, What's happening here? Like, why is this the type of person who's basically, I mean, he's not just an actor. I read the Hollywood Reporter or Entertainment Weekly piece with him. It seems like he does actually have with the writers some input on the character. He's talked about wardrobe options being incorporated to be gender neutral or like gender nonconforming. He's going to be wearing skirts in the episodes. He's also kind of described how his relationship with the new companion is going to be more akin to like two high school girls giggling with each other. What's happening? Why is this Doctor Who now?
Well, I have to admit that's never been in Doctor Who before. And there's a reason, because it's a horrible idea. Yeah. Why are they doing this? Abject narcissism. And it's a new religion. I just heard Dave Smith talk about this last night I was watching. Everybody needs something. Everybody's wired to worship something. They just are. So if there's no God in your life, it's the government. If it's not, it's an ideology. I fully believe this. And it's the only thing that makes sense because it's not going to make you money. You're in a business to make money. So this is possibly the worst business decision you can make, other than maybe following up the first female doctor played by Jodie Whittaker with another female doctor. I mean, like, this is the closest thing to being the worst possible decision with the best people, at least we thought at the time, with Russell T. Davies. Russell T. Davies brought Doctor Who back, and his early era is unquestionably great television. Great television. What happened to RTD? At that time, I would put the term gay icon on him because he was a person who actually talked to all sides, didn't really judge anybody at the time, didn't really talk down to the audience, and was loved by everybody. And then he turned into a bitter old activist. And I think it's 2016. 2012 was when the BBC's version of DEI, it wasn't called that, DEI was implemented. I was at the store and somebody said, everything's going to change with Doctor Who. This is right around about a year before the 50th. I'm like, no, really? Nah. And then it started creeping in with the Capaldi era. And then it turned up to 11 with season 11 and it's just gotten worse. So we're at the point of stop it. It's already dead. Like just stop. It got commissioned for two seasons with Disney. It's now an American show. It's basically an American show. That's why I call it Disney's Doctor Who now. And it will fail. And the thing that's funny is it's being shown in America first. And like Doctor Who is British. It should not have any American influence at all. And you could see the American influence with a dude wearing skirts and frolicking around and twerking. It's sad, but it's at this point, I mean, you could just chronicle its demise if anybody even wants to watch it. It had some of the lowest ratings for a debut Doctor. And then you brought Tennant back for specials, and they were horrid. They were horrid.
I know, and when I saw that Tennant was going to be coming back, I was actually kind of excited.
I was too.
Because I think, you know, he's someone who everybody who watches Doctor Who, you know, they liked his performance. They love him as the Doctor. He is someone who I think of as like, oh yeah, that was when Doctor Who was actually Doctor Who. But then I watched the Christmas specials, or at least parts of them. I don't think I made it through all the way through all of them. But it's the same thing. You have like trans characters, like, I mean, asking alien beings for their pronouns. Like, what is happening? It's like they're so far gone from what Doctor Who used to be. They're not even capable of just temporarily revisiting the quality we used to see.
Incapable is the word. I think it's actually beyond, I think in a lot of cases in Hollywood, it's unwillingness out of fear and DEI that you could just go recast Captain America and make a Captain America movie. That would make more money than this next one. But in the BBC's case, I just think they're incapable. I think they're so brainwashed with their own ideology. Like, they just think the politics is settled, we're right, and you're wrong. That's been the attitude that's the attitude for 5 or 6 years, then we just got to accept that's their attitude, that they think it's just settled, which it's not, because all your audience went away. And all you need to do is cast a doctor. I don't care what color the doctor is. Nobody's ever cared that in that article, they try to point out just black doctor is like, no, it's got nothing to do with it. You can have a black doctor. That's fine.
Yeah, like the blackness is not what I see most people focusing on.
No, it's not. No, it's not what I have a problem with at all. You got to have a 1,000-yard stare. You got to be able to be kind of absent-minded, but also the biggest badass in the universe, and be able to flip that on a switch. Matt Smith was able to do it perfectly. Same with Tenet, and same with Eccleston. But not with Shurigawa. So the ratings will, I predict, within the first few episodes be lower than Jody's, unless there's some fudgery going on.
Well, let's talk about the future here, because like you mentioned, Doctor Who is now going to be streaming on Disney Plus, and I've seen reports that budget is actually bigger than previous episodes. It kind of seems like we're failing upwards here, because I was following actually your coverage of Jodie Whittaker's Doctor Who seasons. Numbers keep plummeting, fan reaction very negative. I was surprised that they were going to be coming back with another Doctor, let alone seemingly getting an upgrade. Like this, you would expect this to happen after a show was smashing records, extremely positive reaction. Now you have a bigger platform, bigger budget, but it's worse than it's ever been. It's less popular than it's ever been. Like, why? How are these people literally failing upwards all the time?
Because the people in charge have no idea what they're doing. I mean, that's part of it. They were probably sold that, hey, the guy who made Doctor Who popular based the comeback on Buffy and Angel, without watching a second of it, they decided, they were sold that basically the George Lucas of the new Doctor Who was coming back. And that sounds good on paper. Oh, we're bringing the most popular Doctor and one of the most popular companions back with Donna and the 10th Doctor. That sounds great. Everybody was excited. Then we started seeing it. And by then it was too late, you know, and that's why we hear a lot of talk of, well, should he maybe gone after two seasons? It's shorter seasons. They're only 8 episode seasons. Usually they're 12 to 13 episode seasons. That's basically one season cut in half, almost right. One season cut in half. And ultimately it's going to be gone after 2 years, like without a doubt. It didn't chart. These specials didn't chart in the US at all on the Nielsens in any way, shape, or form, in original or I forgot the other category, which is there's original content, and then there's overall, then there's our overall streaming, which usually what's dominated on overall streaming, old shows are the ones that dominate all the time. So they got more money from Disney. It's another thing Iger ruined, and it's partially because we have a bunch of executives who never watch their own stuff, listening to middle management, largely HR, DEI, making creative decisions when they don't have a creative bone in their body.
Yeah, many such cases, very frustrating. And I mean, it just makes me long for the olden days where brands used to mean something when it comes to quality. So my daughter, she's 2 now. So we've watched a couple of old Disney movies with her. We watched, what was it? Hercules. Love that movie. It was so amazing. Still love that movie. And I think the other day, what was it we tried to watch? That was a little newer. Oh yeah, Princess and the Frog. More contemporary, still a great film. Compare that to things like Strange World or Wish that came out, Disney's latest movies. And it's night and day difference. It honestly doesn't seem like the same studio anymore. And I feel like that is the same case with, you know, Doctor Who. Even if you might have the same people on board, it doesn't feel like the same property. It doesn't feel like the same quality. Is quality dead now? Because, you know, I'm looking at these huge studios like Disney specifically. If anyone should be capable of delivering a good movie by now, it should be them. They have unlimited resources. They're the biggest names. What creative wouldn't want to work for Disney? But it's crap. They're literally churning out crap. I don't even understand at this point, like, what's happening, because it shouldn't be that hard to just make a good movie. I'm not saying I could do better. But in some ways, yeah, I think I could do better. I definitely could do better than Wish. I could do better than Strange World.
If you want to know what happened, is particularly with Wish, if you want to take a long time on a deep rabbit hole dive, the D-Files on Film Threat with Alan Ng and Chris Gore working on this, they had a bunch of people from Disney contact them anonymously and kind of break down what happened. And this was supposed to be their 100-year anniversary film. The culmination of all big Disney deal. Animated, a big deal. And they had TikTok and Tumblr artists working on it because they drove away all the old guys. with PC nonsense. And it's I'm barely scratching the surface on how insane it was. And they start with like getting rid of John Lasseter at Pixar and they go all the way down. But that's what happened with Wish. Yeah, that's the explanation. They decided one day, hey, half of our animators need to be women. And they're like, okay, all right. Sounds good in concept. Are that many women interested and good enough to animate Disney films? Doesn't matter. Go to Tumblr, go to TikTok, get them. You know, if they've doodled on a piece of paper, bring them in. And that's what they did. They just filled a quota. And it it's not just filling a quota. It's filling a quota with Tumblr artists. So you're bringing in insane people. Sorry to make a broad generalization. That's probably mostly 100% true. But you're bringing in insane people who are going to drive away your older artists. And that's exactly what happened.
Yeah. And I feel like it's at every level too. I did a review when that came out. Obviously the animation's been torn to shred. It looks unfinished. People have also criticized like even something like the music, the lyrics, not what we are expecting from Disney quality. And again, the writing. I feel like a good script should be the cheapest part of a film to secure because there are who knows how many talented, starving writers out there, but it's always garbage. And you know, when people criticize DEI, you know, they'll say like, oh, well, it's not about getting people who aren't qualified. It's just making sure that everyone has an equal chance. Like, well, it kind of seems like they're putting unqualified people in these positions, frankly, based on what we're seeing, based on what is turning out. And actually, we were kind of mentioning this before the show started. We have this quote from Jerry Seinfeld. He says, the movie business is over. Film doesn't occupy the pinnacle in the cultural hierarchy anymore. Disorientation replaced it. I mean, I definitely feel like the golden age of movies is behind us, but I want to hear what your thoughts are.
Absolutely. And I was many of us, not just me, many of us over the last 6 years were warning this very thing would happen. And 6 years ago, we were called completely insane. And hey, 6 years ago, it sounded insane. Mm-hmm. Like, wow, they're choosing identity politics over story. That's insane. But that's what they did. I'm sick to death of DEI and watching it. I wish I would never mention it again. But the fact is, we're going to get the leftovers, not even what they consider the good stuff, what they consider the bad stuff. We're going to be getting that for the next year. I was looking at the film schedule for this year, and it is grim. It is absolutely grim. It's filled with prequels, sequels, and like I think the only thing that's going to do well is like low budget horror films. Those are the only ones that look good at all. And then the anime Lord of the Rings at the end of the year. But outside of Deadpool 3, it's grim. Now what Jerry says there is absolutely right. There's just too much out there. In one of my Hollywood Strike videos, even Tom Hanks admits it. Tom Hanks goes, "You know what? We got another problem. There's this free thing called YouTube out there." That has commercials on it that makes a bunch of money where all the advertisers are starting to go, which is what now watched by more people than on Netflix in their home theaters. So we're not talking about desktops. We're talking about in their home theaters. There's tons of variety on that. And why is Netflix winning the streaming war? It's got a bunch of crap, but it's got a couple of good things. It's got variety. Everything else sucks. Everything else is just terrible. And it is suck. The theater will always be around. It'll be artisanal. I don't know about like these giant 4D theaters with 20 theaters. I don't know how much longer they last, but we'll always have theaters of some kind. And that's good because I love the experience. I love going.
Same. But
movies, Hollywood is not and has not for a long time. I've talked about it a lot on my channel. Is not the go-to form of entertainment anymore. It's gaming. And it's not even close. Like gaming eclipses most things like combined. Music industry, movie industry, television industry, and I will say live sports, not counting merchandise. We won't count merchandise because merchandise is a lot of money for sports. The gaming industry is $160, $70, $80 billion industry. It's only getting bigger because it's not centralized, because it's just all around the world. And that's what they're going to have to deal with now. Jerry Seinfeld talks about is authenticity. You heard that one from our good friend, Robert Burnett. Authenticity is the currency of the future. And now people are going, you know, more people than ever going to live comedy shows because that's real entertainment. You're actually interacting. You're there live. The great Douglas Adams predicted this 24 years ago, about a week. It was his last interview, about a week before his death. He said, interactivity, that is the future of entertainment. Go look it up. It is, it's very prophetic, man. And he was right. He was right. So that's what they're dealing with.
And it's interesting because even in, I'm like you, I love going to the movies. I find it's an actual experience. There's something magical about it. I have the AMC like movie pass thing. So we go all the time. And it's not just because I want to review a lot of the stuff for my channel, but I think Hollywood ultimately, they're suffering from hubris. I think they thought that they were too big to fail, that people were just bound to watch their movies because they were being made and because, oh, well, you know, it's going to be in theaters. Therefore, people are going to show up. Like I said, I don't think they realize how big something like gaming is getting, and even YouTube. So there are, like, I've had to just slosh through series because I wanted to review it. And I've caught myself thinking, wow, like Netflix, Prime, whatever it is, they must have spent at least tens of millions, if not hundreds of millions of dollars on this. But I personally would rather be watching some guy in his basement a YouTube video that's actually entertaining, that's actually engaging. And it's like, how bad is that? That with all of your Hollywood resources, you still can't compete in entertainment value for a show, with a show like Friday Night Tights. I think if you're a Hollywood executive, you should absolutely be ashamed of that fact that you are losing audiences, you're losing dollars. I mean, to people who really have basically just their charisma to stand on. No, it's funny, and I'm kind of excited to see where this leads. And I say that as someone who obviously is like in digital media herself, but let's touch on gaming a little bit, because that's something you mentioned too.
I'm a known expert in gaming for sure.
Yeah. But obviously games, they're kind of going through their own cultural reckoning right yes. now. I mean, my husband, he plays a lot more video games than me, but he'll often say that it's almost as if the gaming community, more so than, people in fandoms like Doctor Who, like series or movies, they are really trying to hold their creators to account and letting their voices be heard in a way that, yeah, like we're doing with things like Marvel and Disney Star Wars, but it seems like the gaming community is a lot more, it's almost more vocal and maybe, to use one of the words you threw around, interactive with it, with yes. the developers than something like a series or a TV show or movie.
Absolutely. And passionate. Like passionate to a level that comic book fans, when they were large in numbers, were way back in the day. And they don't like their hobbies being messed with. And I think this is why the activists like, hey, we'll get to other things first. We'll do other things first, because it's a lot easier, because it's centralized. Gaming is going to be a whole different beast. You can get to the AAA big corporations all you want, but there is a thriving, healthy, independent market that can, I believe, knowing very little about gaming in reality, I think it could dominate, absolutely mm-hmm. dominate, because it's big enough. Think of Hollywood in the 90s when Quentin Tarantino came around and just independent films dominated for a while. And which was a beautiful thing to see, because it helps course correct things, helps balance a market, because you want it balanced. You want it balanced so it can grow. Yeah, taking on the gamers is a bad idea. We saw a microcosm of it with the Tolkien fandom with Rings of Power. And we saw a fandom like really fight back and say, no, hell no. Not with Tolkien. So this is much bigger in scale. And it's been coming for a long, long time. People call it Gamergate 2.0. I just think like Gamergate 1 was a very silent Cold War for a while. Mm-hmm. Now there are rumors that my good friend Dan Vass started Gamergate Part 2. Maybe he did, maybe he didn't, I'm not sure. But when that started about a year ago, it just started shining the light on what had gone underground, right? Anita Sarkeesian and her ilk will spread out throughout the industry and went underground and relabeled everything. As far, you know, if I'm getting any of this wrong, please correct me, but that's certainly what it looks like. Right. And then some weaponized autism and gaming, and Caprutus is out there. Grums, who are just killing it right now. My friend Jeremy's been talking about a lot from Geeks and Gamers. You know Jeremy. And they're fighting back. And I would say they're winning. They're winning and it's not even close. And it's kind of fun to watch. It's so rare for us fans to get such a clear win and just root it on. And we're seeing companies crumble and cope and cringe, and it's great. It's great. Now, they're going to continue doing this. It's not like they're going to stop right away, but they'll have to at some point, as long as the, you know, you hold the line, gamers, hold the line. Yeah, I say we, the royal we. That's right. That includes me. Okay, I play an hour of every couple months in a game.
Hey, I'm super casual too, and I'm still following all of this stuff. And I feel like for all the talk about kind of gatekeeping within the gaming community, which is something that we hear from feminists a lot, I find it like if you're talking to someone about a game but you don't play it a lot, as long as you're not trying to come in and tell other people who are more invested what to do, how they should be treating their hobby, I find it's a pretty welcoming atmosphere. I think people just want to know that they're allowed to pursue their own hobby without other people trying to police it, which I think is fair regardless of what the hobby is. But you mentioned Deadpool and Wolverine. So we just had a trailer drop. What was it? I think it was Monday. A new one, number one on trending within hours. It doesn't release the actual film until July, I'm pretty sure. I don't know about you, but this is the first Marvel film that I'm actually excited about in years. In years and years and years. So is Ryan Reynolds' charisma going to deliver a win finally for Disney? And if so, what do you think that means for the future of the MCU?
The MCU needs a win in the worst way, and not just one. There's a saying in Hollywood, you're only one film away from turning things around. I think career-wise, yes. Franchise-wise with the MCU, I think you're like four movies from turning things around. I think you need... Yeah. You need four hits. Ryan Reynolds' charisma can carry a film. We all know that. And I think it'll probably be a win. That would be, if it's not, oh my God, that will be the biggest disaster of them all, bringing Hugh Jackman back. And it's great to see them both back. And I liked the last trailer. I didn't think it was the greatest thing I've ever seen, but I liked it. I thought it was, you know, I think they're just, it's a slow drip with the trailers, which I think is a really smart move. Mm-hmm. But the other part, so I think it'll be a hit. I think it's the one of two films this year, Lauren, that have the potential of making $1 billion. None of them else do. Like,
what would you say is the second one?
Despicable Me 4.
Oh, yeah. Illumination, for all the hate that they get, they consistently perform at the box office. It's not woke. I find them cute. They're movies that I wouldn't mind my daughter watching. So I think, honestly, Disney should be taking notes from them. 100%.
But I definitely think, aside from their trash that they're going to release on D Plus, they made a concerted effort. Like, this is the only movie we're going to release this year. We're going to have a win. It could make $1 billion. It'll be filled with cameos. And some of them are going to be pretty fun. You're going to laugh, but it's just cameos. My concern, what does this do for the future of the MCU? Absolutely nothing. Mm. Zero. It doesn't fix it. It just gives Disney a win to talk to their investors the next quarter, which is pretty much all their intention, by the way. But it doesn't fix the MCU at all. As a matter of fact, I would argue it will make things worse. So Spider-Man No Way Home comes out. Big friggin' hit. And I loved it. Everybody liked it. People were cheering in the movie theaters like, wow, man. They didn't do anything with it. They didn't fast track a Spider-Man 4. And they followed it with a bunch of garbage. Imagine if they followed Spider-Man No Way Home with this. It would be a $2 billion movie. Not maybe a $1 billion movie. As a rated R movie, by the way. I think 3 F-bombs dropped in the trailer. Good for you, Disney. You're so edgy. But no, it doesn't fix anything. Just like Spider-Man No Way Home didn't fix anything. Just like Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 3. Didn't fix anything because it was followed by the Marvels, which was followed by Echo on Disney Plus and What If, which nobody watched. And you're only as good as your last movie. Doctor Strange Mom, a lot of that first weekend was brought on from the success of Spider-Man No Way Home. And then it dropped off a cliff and almost got to a billion, but didn't get to a billion. And then right. It was downhill from there. So I don't think it fixes anything. I think it's a stopgap. I think it's a gimmick. I think people will be fun, and there's nothing wrong with people having fun. And I want it to be good. I want to go and have a good time at the theater. I see the TVA from Loki though, and it kind of turns me off unless Deadpool is just killing them all, and then I'm fine with that. And then they have another cameo fest coming later on, so they can't blow their cameo wad on Deadpool Wolverine because they have Secret Wars coming up, which is supposed to be the big cameo fest. Right. Personally, I don't know about you, Lauren. I don't know about you guys in the chat. Kind of over the multiverse thing.
Like, yes,
really,
I am
really
so,
done with it.
I am so over the multiverse thing, but I in the last trailer, it does seem like Deadpool and Wolverine, there's going to be some multiverseness going on. They talk about, well, this world, whatever, being destroyed. So I was never into the multiverse, but I think especially now. So we have this Avengers, the Kang Dynasty. I thought this was, is this confirmed that it's real? Because this seems fake to me. Like, this just seems... this seems fake. I don't want to believe this is real because it looks terrible.
The Hollywood handle is at minimum what I've seen 50% BS. So they might announce, they have not made they've made an official announcement that there's going to be an Avengers film in between, you know, the last, you know, right before, not in between, but right before Secret Wars. But right. I heard they were pulling the title. I've heard they're keeping the title. I've heard they're recasting Kane. I heard they're going to bring in a new, the High Evolutionary from Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 3 should be your villain. He's a better villain than Kang.
And he also doesn't have all that domestic, you know.
No domestic problems. Right. I would argue a better actor with a better villain motivation. Basically a Dr. Mengele of the Marvel Universe, you know.
Right. I agree. That would be a lot more interesting. And him as a villain was one of my favorite parts of the Guardians of the Galaxy movie. I thought it was really well done. But I mean, aside from the Kangness of it all, and maybe I'm on the internet too much and seeing, you know, Kang as a pharaoh, just, oh my gosh, it tickles my funny bone in not a good way for Marvel. But whether this specific poster is real or not, I think this is sadly what we are kind of left with in terms of Avengers. We have Lady Black Panther. Yeah, we have Spider-Man, but we also have not Captain America, Shang-Chi, you know, Captain Marvel.
Doctor Strange, who has never really, I like Doctor Strange, but Doctor Strange is, they wanted Doctor Strange to be Tony Stark and Iron Man. They wanted him to pick up the mantle and it just didn't work. It just didn't work. Spider-Man's back would be heavy on this one because he'd be carrying the entire movie. And we don't know if he's going to be in it. I think part of the reason they haven't fast-tracked to Spider-Man 4 is because I don't know if they have a solid deal with Sony yet. I've never heard a straight answer on that. Been lots of rumors, lots of reports. But I've never seen anything official on the Spider-Man Sony Marvel deal. Now, they'd be stupid not to do one. They'd be absolutely stupid, but this is Hollywood. And, Tom Rothman, the CEO of Sony, is effing stupid and hates superhero films. Makes no secret of it. And put out Madam Web. You put out Madam Web. So,
wait, are you saying that Madam Web wasn't just an absolute slam dunk of a film?
It was a slam dunk to make a video on, but I had a good time watching it, but for all the wrong reasons. So it was like watching a B movie. It was like watching a B movie.
I know that was my impression. So I sat down in the theater, and for the first at least 10 minutes, I could not believe that this was the correct movie that was playing. It seemed like a B movie. The writing was so bad. I mean, the amount of exposition dumping in the first few minutes, it's like, really, you guys couldn't figure out a way to better ease us in? But then eventually, sure enough, Dakota Johnson appears on screen. It's like, okay, I guess this actually is the movie. Very disappointing. Very, very disappointing. But I mean, like I said, good for content, good to have a laugh at, but it didn't seem like a film to me by someone who had seen a real movie before. Like, I feel like even if you've just seen a good movie before, you should know enough to kind of try to replicate that. I don't know what they were thinking when they were shooting, writing, all just a mess.
All a mess. The only thing it did was, I think it helped the career. Well, it definitely helped Sydney Sweeney, who also had a pretty popular sitcom out at the time. Actually, the only sitcom to make $200 million in almost a decade, which is that's a whole video, right? Maybe I should make a video on that. and also her attitude, her and Dakota's attitude after that film propelled their careers. I actually like them more now than I did before. Because I was watching Dakota's interviews, and you could tell she knew it was a total piece of crap. So she's trying to roll with this as best as she can. And she's got this little tongue-in-cheek smirk thing going on. And it's funny. It is hilarious. And Sydney's, they tried to get, if they look like they did on the red carpet, sorry, Lauren, but I mean, that's what everybody pointed out in the movie. It would have probably done better. But yeah, they've actually, their careers are better off because of their attitude and not like blaming the fans, blaming this, blaming that, just going, yeah, actually Dakota defended the fans in it. Yeah. So, yeah, props to her. Props to her. No.
I love it when you can tell that actors basically, it seems, were forced to do or compelled to do a film because of certain studio obligations. But we do have some super chats I want to get to. Thank you guys so much. Walt knew girls liked princesses, boys liked adventures. The woke thing Disney is why girls and boys like them. They want to seize the means of production to make women CEOs, trans admirals, etc. in 20 years. And it's funny. So a couple of weeks ago, I had Mr. H on, and he made a great point about how, you know, it kind of seemed like the reason to acquire properties like Marvel and like Star Wars was to bring in more male fans to Disney, because obviously Disney, you have the princess, the girl audience captured. But since they've acquired it, all they've tried to do is, I guess, make those franchises more female-centric, which kind of defeats the purpose. I think they're operating under the assumption that men and women just want the same things, and you can have like 100% market share with a single franchise, which is not, I don't think, possible. Like, people are going to have different preferences and what they want to watch. And now we're seeing that even if you make a superhero female and gay, still doesn't mean that women are going to like it. No, far from it.
No, not at all. Why do you think, I think it's Anyone But You. I'm pretty sure that's the name of the sitcom.
Yes.
Stuck. It came out before Christmas, stuck in the box office for months. You think dudes were going to see that? No, even though Sydney Sweeney's in it.
Yeah.
A lot of Sydney Sweeney. But Glenn Powell's in it too. And it's actually a ridiculous movie. I didn't really like it that much, but I mean, there was some funny parts. It's just the premise is shockingly unbelievable. But I don't want to get you in trouble, so I won't tell you why and my opinion on it. But it's because a lot of women went to see that. A lot of women went to see that, and that's fine. My good friend Chris Gore tweets this once in a while. He's been talking about it. I've been talking about it. Yes, Disney bought Marvel and Star Wars because Disney was a girl's brand. Mm-hmm. Disney was a girl's brand, and they needed more boys. And then they turned the boys' brands into girls' brands, and it's one of the single dumbest business decisions in entertainment, if not the single dumbest of all time. Of all time. Hail Frank Gore, by the way.
It's very true. Stupid business decision, but I can simultaneously see why marketing people were kind of like, imagine if all the men who liked it still liked it, but also we got women in. Like, they tried to have their cake and eat it too, and they found out that you can't really do that. You can't expect, you know, a 35-year-old man to probably love the same film that an 18-year-old girl is going to go crazy over. And that's okay. And I think the reason why Anyone But You did so well is because women love rom-coms. I mean, for years now, women have been told what you need to like is Star Wars and Marvel because we've put a woman in it. Look, I personally like Star Wars and Marvel, but that's not everybody. Like, that's not my mom, certainly. That's not a lot of my friends. And I think women were so happy, like, oh, finally, just like a rom-com with a cute girl and cute guy who get together. There's situational comedy. That's not that hard. And another reason why I think Anyone But You was kind of a unexpected hit is because of the Chinese market, the international market, we've also seen less comedies from Hollywood because we know that the humor just doesn't translate in the same way. And I think, gosh, who was it? Adam Levine. I think he recently remarked that, yeah, comedies in Hollywood are kind of not a thing anymore like they were in the earlier 2000s. You had these huge comedy films like, I mean, Seth Rogen, Judd Apatow coming up with them. That's not really a thing anymore. Now it's almost like if it's not going to play in China, then we're not funding it. So Anyone But You kind of went against the grain there. But Lamar says, hope you get to meet that Star Wars girl next. Oh, I would love to have her on the show too. She's a lot of fun. And Ji-Hun Shin, yep, says, do you think there will be woke leftists in the upcoming Jurassic World 4 movie? If so, how do you think it will suck or be ruined? I can't remember off the top of my head if I've seen, personally, you talk about those Jurassic World movies. What did you think of them?
I saw one, and we were just discussing it. I was discussing it with some fellow YouTubers, and it was woke. There's like a dinosaur activist, and I didn't watch any of the others. I just didn't bother. Yeah. I just like, nah, I'm out. It's a long story. Spielberg's Jurassic Park was one of those films I missed that I would normally see in the theater, but I missed because I was a ward of the state. I was a little occupied at the time, wasn't free to go see movies. And I didn't see it till way later. And I mean, way later, I didn't get around to seeing it, but, love the movie. Absolutely adore the movie. I think the recent sequels with Chris Pratt were just, I thought they were ridiculous. So yeah. I just kind of dipped out on that one. Kind of like the MonsterVerse, like Kong X Godzilla. I know a lot of people get very passionate about that. It's like a big human cartoon. If you see it like as a Saturday morning cartoon for 10-year-old kids, absolutely take your 10-year-old kid to see it. It's a ridiculous movie.
Oh, it's very ridiculous.
Yeah,
it's very ridiculous. I don't know if you guys have seen it. I did a review of it over Mediaholic, but essentially you have like sub Earth. You have telekinetic lost tribes. It's a lot. It's a lot. Already you have Godzilla and Kong, so obviously there's going to be a level of disbelief. But I think they really push the limit of like what exactly, like what thread lines could piece together a single film. No, but it made a crap ton of money.
And it's doing well internationally, and God bless them.
I know. And that's my dad is a great, so he's kind of, I think he represents the Chinese movie going mindset, like good guy, bad guy, action, that's fine, not so concerned about the plot, let's just see, you know, where CGI can take us, which is, you know, it's a fun popcorn flick if nothing else. Trav to the World says, a movie about a gorgeous young woman and a suddenly handsome young man falling in love is going to do better than a rom-com about insufferable middle-aged gay men deciding to try monogamy for a bit. That is true. Shout out to the film Bros. Yeah, which I don't know who greenlit that at the studio, but they definitely should have been fired. Okay, so we've talked a lot about what's not working in Hollywood right now. Are there any shows that you are actually excited about or films that you're looking forward to, you're enjoying? I mean, we mentioned Deadpool and Wolverine. Is there anything else?
Yes, War of the Rohirrim. That's the movie I'm looking forward to the most this year because I'm a giant Lord of the Rings fan, and they're bringing in Philippa Boyens, who wrote both The Hobbit and Lord of the Rings. And it looks like it's produced by Warner Brothers, who actually has more distribution rights than Amazon, which has very few distribution rights, basically to the appendices, which is nothing. I am going to finish Shogun tonight, and I am liking Shogun quite a bit. Like, I think it's a very strong, good show that everybody should watch. It's almost like it, they change a bit from the books, okay, from the book, but it is very Japanese focused. Most of it is in Japanese, and I'm completely fine with that. Don't watch the dub version, it's awful. Watch the normal version, which is great. Also The Gentleman, which, this is why I hate the binge model. The Gentleman released a couple of months ago. It is the best show I've seen in a year. It's Guy Ritchie, even though we have a Guy Ritchie movie out that's very average. This show, The Gentleman, is very Guy Ritchie, and it's very good. It is very, very good. Top tier, 9 out of 10 show. Like, go and see it as soon as you can. And it's just, the premise of it basically is from the movie, but it's different characters. There's a Gentleman movie, by the way, and it's British lords who are short on cash growing weed underneath their estates, and the adventures they go on, and it's pretty hilarious and earnest all at the same time, like good crime Guy Ritchie stuff.
Well, go ahead. Well, I mean, on Guy Ritchie is probably one of my favorite directors. I love his stuff. And I'm actually not a huge fan of his Sherlock Holmes stuff. But, you know, Guy Ritchie to me is at his best when he's doing things with British people who are engaged in banter and pulling off some sort of heist or crime. That's his niche. That's where he thrives. He clearly loves that stuff. And I do too. Rock and Rolla, very underrated film, one of his earlier ones, but probably still one of my favorite films. We have a young Tom Hardy in there. I actually liked Ministry of Ungentlemanly Warfare.
I liked it too.
It's not amazing, but if you like Guy Ritchie doing Guy Ritchie things, it's very much in that same vein, a little bit different because they're not gangsters. They're, you know, it's talking about like World War II stuff. But actually, that kind of brings me to something that I actually shot a video about. I don't think it's out yet, but star of that film, or one of, because I think Henry Cavill is pretty much the lead, but then you have Alan Ritchson who plays Reacher, supporting role. Ungentlemanly Warfare didn't do great, okay? Brought in $9 million opening weekend, got a $60 million budget. Is it going to actually make its money? I don't know. I think it's an unfortunate fact that a lot of Guy Ritchie films, I was looking through his filmography, unfortunately just don't make a lot of money. I think Gentleman, the film, was an exception. I guess not everyone is as big of a Guy Ritchie fan as I am. Do you think it's fair to say, though, that Alan Ritchson's comments and his very active social media presence politically, do you think that actually made an impact on the box office? Because I'm someone who, like, I look at this and I would love to say, get woke, go broke. But I also just think I'm not surprised that not many people saw this movie, even though I think it's pretty solid.
Yeah, I agree. I don't think they promoted it enough. And I think the studio knew that they had, like, conceptually what should have been 10 out of 10 great, and right, they kind of just made a 6-7 out of 10 movie, so they only put 6 maybe 5 out of 10 movie marketing in it. No, I don't really think so. I think we will, but that could change, Lauren, when Reacher season 3 comes out, and we'll see the response to that, because Reacher has a very large general audience, which is, let's just use I don't know off the top of our head, half of them are probably going to be Republican or centrist or lean that way, or I don't know, maybe not hate. Like, I'm in the camp of, I don't love the cops and I don't hate the cops. They're right, a part of our reality, but I'm not like, I'm going to break my pom-poms out for the cops anytime soon. So, but there's a lot of people who just don't hate the cops. So, and there's a lot of people on both sides who hate it when actors who are dumb as a bag of hammers come out and try to speak. And he likes to talk a lot. He really does. I don't know if you saw him on his preacher thing. He's got the gift of gab, and I don't think he's very bright.
No, he's one of those Hollywood celebrities that I can totally imagine some poor PR guy following the interview, just being like, oh my gosh, like this is a problem. And the thing for me is after, I guess, the latest comments about Trump kind of went viral, I spent some time looking at his previous stuff because I did a video about it all. He's one of those activists, and I think it's fair to call him an activist, who's not just pro something. Hey guys, you know, let's push this forward, it's important. You know, let's go out and support this cause, this candidate, whatever. It's not just that he does that, which I think, you know, I find it kind of annoying when celebrities are political, but that's whatever. I don't think people would have a problem with that. A lot of celebrities do that, but he goes and attacks people. He's very negative. Like he's done an interview calling Christians the most vitriolic tribe. He said, like, not just, hey, let's talk about police brutality. He says cops get away with murder all the time, which is a totally different position than just, hey, accountability training and stuff. He, you know, attacked Elon Musk over Twitter, basically calling the platform full of hate speech, misinformation. So he's a divisive fellow, like shockingly disagreeable. And I mean, I like Reacher. I think it's a well-written show, surprisingly not woke. But the thing is, the audience he's catering to with those beliefs, absolutely the type of people to find Reacher toxically masculine. Because we saw that complaint about the show.
We did. So he alienated a huge portion of his audience with those comments. And we will see. We will see when Reacher season 3, which they're filming right now, comes out. I think it was stupid. You know what? Hey, thanks for watching Reacher. We really appreciate that. Our little show is the most watched show on Amazon. We were beating the Rings of Power. That's brilliant. You guys are awesome. Go read Lee Child's books. Hey, I'm gonna go plant a tree now. Thank you. That's all you need to do. That's all you need to do. We've been saying that for years. Just don't say anything. Not asking you to change your politics. You can have your dumb beliefs, but you are representing Amazon. You're representing your show, and you, you know, you want to be, you want to have mass appeal. You want to have mass appeal. So just don't be dumb. But that's, you know, it's very hard for a lot of adult pretenders. And it's not like Alan Rich. He was actually the best thing in Ungentlemanly Warfare. He was.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. He actually pulled off his, I think it was a Danish accent. It was believable enough. I'm sure there are some people who might disagree, but he was the best thing in it. But then when you fan the flame, you could say like, I don't like Trump's policy. That's fair enough. No problem.
Right.
But like, he's a, you know, a drapist and needs to be in jail and all his followers are, you know, Yahtzees. It's like, okay. See that. That's a little
That's the thing.
Much.
Like, I think we should normalize people having political opinions we don't agree with. That's fine. But it's the outward, like it's the attacks that he clearly makes against people who disagree with him. And again, I like the show, but I'm not under any impression that if he were to, you know, meet me and know my political views, that he would view me as anything other than, like you said, a Yahtzee, which is, it's too bad. But let's talk about Amazon a little bit. Are you interested in Warhammer at all? Do you partake?
I do not partake in Warhammer, but I would definitely watch a show with Henry Cavill, unless there's trans flags flying around in the background, and that might take me out of it a little bit.
That's the concern, isn't it? Because Warhammer is, I mean, a huge franchise, very dedicated, loyal fan base. Henry Cavill, someone who's been a fan for a long time, you know, he's in the community. A lot of people were really excited when they found out that he was going to be not only starring, but acting as a producer in a show adapting Warhammer for, you know, small screen. The problem, though, is that it's on Amazon. Okay, I'm not saying everything on Amazon is bad. Like we talked about Reacher. I think they do a good job with the like military thriller things, because they also did Jack Ryan as well as Terminal List. But let's not forget, this is the same studio that brought us Rings of Power. Mm. So, I mean, and along with there was this huge controversy lately about the people at Games Workshop, basically kind of retconning their own lore, saying that, you know, Adeptus Custodes, these super soldiers, they can actually be feminine or females now. Even though you're making a genetically modified super soldier, why you would start off with a female who's going to be less strong and less fast doesn't really make sense. But I don't know. I'm worried. I'm concerned. I want to be proven wrong. A Fallout, another video game adaptation. Just watch that. I thought it started off kind of slow, but overall was solid, not super woke. But I don't know how much goodwill I have left to give Amazon, basically.
Yeah. I mean, I didn't like Fallout's kind of split. I didn't like it, but I'm like, I'm not into the game. It's definitely not the worst thing I've ever seen by far. I mean, there were still like things I took out of it that I liked, like Walton Goggins. Like, he's really freaking good. And I like the dog, but what's there not to like with the dog? But Amazon's hit and miss, and it's pretty. My theory is Jennifer Salk or Salky, however you want to say her last name, who is kind of like the Kathleen Kennedy of Amazon in a lot of ways. she's from NBC. She's got a marketing background, not a creative background. And she basically usurped Amazon Prime Video from a gentleman named Roy Price, who was the guy who developed it early days, who gave us The Tick, got The Boys rights, got the Rings of Power rights before they got completely screwed up, got the Invincible rights. Just all the good shows that kind of they started out with, that dude, along with some people who worked with him, very good people. Like started out, this is pre-2016, by the way, folks, pre-TDS. Then Salky comes in, takes over the big shows and starts to insert herself in them. Like, and I did a whole video called The Making of a Disaster, Rings of Power, Making a Disaster. And I break all this down. So I don't think she's that involved with Reacher and Terminal List. That's to make a long story short. I think she kind of lets those things do their thing. Terminal List was awesome. That was a good show. That was a good show. So, I mean, you're good. It's like Netflix. You have Damsel and Rebel Moon, but then you have The Gentlemen. So, you know, as long as there's some balance there, I don't care if there's some cringe. I mean, like I'll roast it, but it's fine. I don't trust Amazon to make a good Warhammer, but I trust Henry. And I think Henry Cavill was born in the wrong era. I mean, even some of my friends are like, maybe he's not the big star you think he is. I'm like, he was born in the wrong era. He's an action star. But they don't have action stars now. Action stars now are Timothy Chalamet. Mm. You know, big alpha males are just bad. They're toxic masculinity. So he, you know, if he was born 20 years ago, he'd be a bigger star. He just would be. And so would Alan Ritchson. Alan Ritchson would be in every action movie. Both those guys would be in every action movie, but now they're relegated to some 7 out of 10 movie. Henry has control over this. So I think let's give it a chance. We'll see what happens.
Yeah. But I mean, I'm definitely, my fingers are crossed because I want it to be amazing. This isn't one of those shows that I hope is terrible for the lulls, admittedly, like I did with Velma, which, by the way, second season, I believe, drops tomorrow in its entirety. And you guys know, rarely a good sign, especially on Amazon, where they bulk release the episodes. Here we got some more chats to get through. Ulf Hednar, so sorry if I'm mispronouncing that. Oh, Gary, just say you're in prison. Y'all should check out The Beekeeper or Beekeeper. The action movie is on the rise. As Becker says, what do you think about a Brit making a movie about a U.S. Civil War? Not going to see it, by the way. Oh, that's actually something we were kind of talking a little bit about. So I haven't seen Civil War. I thought about it, but then everyone was kind of just saying it was boring and mess, so I gave it a miss. You saw it, though. What were your takeaways? Because I know when the trailer dropped, it made a lot of people were talking, you know, Tim Pool, super excited, I imagine.
Yes. About
the prospect of U.S. Civil War, but did it disappoint or did it live up to the expectations?
No, it didn't. Alex Garland is a darling amongst cinephiles, not with me. So I saw this and I thought it was really boring. It was boring and it was too afraid to make a point because what it wanted to be was balanced, but it's so afraid of one side that they just decided we'll make it opaque. We'll make it a blank page. We'll leave it to the viewer to decide and show them next to nothing with no context. Now there is a way you can do this kind of Odyssey film. It's been done a 100 times and really well, 5 or 6 times. Oh Brother, Where Art Thou, Apocalypse Now, Full Metal Jacket. You could just go down the list. We have ordinary people watching like extraordinary horrid events, like, you know, going through and watching, and it's surreal. And they pulled off the surreal thing, but it's mostly four really good objective journalists who are allowed to go wherever the hell they want. Traveling through a war-torn America, taking the long way around from New York to Washington, D.C., because I guess some of the interstates are already just completely pulverized, not with nukes, but with probably artillery or something like that. So they have to make a 200-mile trip and a 1,000-mile trip. And they see the horrors of Civil War America in like four scenes. You get four scenarios. You get the people being tortured at the car wash. You get the weird gay snipers with the fingernail polish taking out a homeowner that you don't see who's trying to lure people out with Christmas decorations in July. You get Jesse Plemons' scene where he's dumping a dump truck of dead bodies into a giant pit of dead bodies that look pretty fresh and asks, what kind of American are you? And they kill the two red shirts. And then they do what their mission was, which was to get the last interview with the president before the Western forces of California and Texas kill the president. Did they set up this meeting? No, they're just like, we're going to go. And they ended up making it. And it's ridiculous. But the most ridiculous thing is it's a love letter to a bygone era of journalism that I would argue never really existed. Mm. It's the idea of what I think classic left had of journalism. The Bob Woodwards of the world, who was basically a CIA asset, by the way, if you want to know. That's old news, but the mighty Bob Woodward, before that date in January in Charlottesville, the left loved to talk about Watergate. Watergate was like Woodstock to them. Watergate would be talked about all the time. Oh, that's journalism. The little guy took down the big guy. No, it was a freaking coup. That's the truth of the matter. It was a coup to take, Nixon wasn't perfect or anything, but it was a coup.
Right.
That idea of journalism never existed. We'd love for it to exist someday, and it will in the independent sphere, but it didn't. That was the whole point of my video. It's like, this is just BS. Like, I would believe America, I would believe Texas and California aligning at some point before I believe there was a good corporate journalist ever.
Yeah.
That's completely objective. Oh, and by the way, it's based on, we're following a photographer around, like, with still photography, and this is supposed to be like 20 years in the future. It's like, it'll all be videography. Sorry, but it'll all be videography at that point.
And, yeah, I mean, it already basically is, frankly.
It is. Yeah.
Yeah.
Anybody looking at those still pictures in black and white, guys?
Yeah. I mean, I'm personally not sad that I gave it a miss. We also have, let's see. Oh, no, delete. I almost deleted a comment. I ain't taking lectures about morality from the star of Blue Mountain State. Fair enough, if you ask me. UP shit. Shoot says, we know quite much about DEI. What are your takes on Bridge?
Oh, Bridge is going to, I got to take a deeper dive on Bridge, but I think Bridge is just, it's a much, like, Sweet Baby Inc. is nothing compared to Bridge. So Bridge is, but it's just one of those things that the names are going to change. The DEI will, the DIE will remain the same. It will just go underground and kill the AAA. And what I meant by win earlier is, like, the independent games are going to take over. Like, you're not going to win back any of your AAA franchises. They're cooked. They're done. Maybe one survives. I don't know. But if they buy into this stuff, they're just done. They're just done.
Yeah. And it's been cool to see in gaming indie games really shine more so than in, I guess, Hollywood independent film studios. Not that I think all independent film studios are terrible, but it just seems like the level of quality that you get from even like a AA studio is more comparable to the AAA than if you were to take something like on Netflix or Prime and compare it to something made by some smaller studio.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Technology is going to help that. AI is going to help that before it kills us all. But it'll even things out. That's why Hollywood was having such an existential crisis. I mean, they had so many bad things happen at once. It was like the perfect storm of failure last year. And they knew it. They knew it. And now they're in trouble. And everything they delayed, it was stupid to delay everything, by the way. They should have just kept the regular release dates, fast-forwarded stuff. So now the stuff they delayed from before the strike, which is their crap, is going to come out this year, and people are just going to find other things to do. If you look at the release schedule, Lauren, where I'm actually, you know what I'm looking forward to? All the re-releases we're getting. This year we're getting Alien in the theater. I believe we're getting Aliens. I don't care about it, but The Phantom Menace is coming out the same day as The Fall Guy, which is stupid. They should just wait till later. But they're re-releasing a bunch of, right now, Spider-Man 2 was yesterday was the number two movie in America.
Wow. That's
made crazy. Almost $1 million in the box office because they re-released Spider-Man 2 from 20 years ago. So that's
interesting because it kind of, whenever we see films fail now, especially these big blockbuster ones, we still hear people saying, oh, well, COVID, people haven't recovered. We're just not sure people are really coming back to the theaters ever like they used to. People will still go to the theaters, even if it's an older movie, if it's something that's good. It's still like, absolutely. And we keep seeing that hypothesis get proven wrong when, there are films that break $1 billion. It's still possible, but it's just, people, if anything, it's that they're less likely to shell out increasingly a lot of money for movie tickets if they know it's going to be bad or even just mid. Wait a couple months, watch it on streaming, save yourself the money.
If I was a movie theater, I try this out. I don't know how often you do it. I would start out with once a quarter, once a quarter in successive weekends, and then do a full re-release Lord of the Rings extended cuts.
Yeah.
On in 3 weeks, and then like on the fourth week, do a marathon. and do that once a quarter, and your theater will be filled every single time. Every single time. You'll sell a bunch of concessions. You'll just make money. That's all you'll do. Somebody should try it.
I think you're right. That's something I would definitely, to be able to see extended version in theater, I would do it. I would be there. Hell,
I would make it a regular thing. I would catch one of those a year. Absolutely. I bring the family. I make a thing out of it. I do it every year. I'd be like, oh yeah, let's go.
Let's see. Enoch Mammon, abuser of Streamlabs. I think there were some chats before the stream started. Did you get those? Just wondering. I got all chats are caught up that were sent before, except one that was very strange and I don't think really appropriate. So I'm giving that one a miss. Sorry, guys. Nick Brown says, if Hollywood doesn't change, I think the popularity of independent content creators will continue to grow. People are tired of being preached to, and that's a good thing. Absolutely. I doubt it will ever happen, but I'd love to see a non-woke remake of Hercules and Xena and fully embrace ancient Greek mythology. Mm. So like Nick's comment does actually remind me of something. What do you think of the, I guess, conservative efforts to get into making series and films, specifically like Daily Wire? We've seen they've done a few movies now. Some of them they've just bought the distribution rights to, like I think Run, Hide, Fight was the first one they launched, but they're also starting to make their own films now, like Lady Ballers, Snow White. There's a version of theirs that's coming out, I think, next year. And we also see the Pendragon Cycle. That's a book series that I'm personally not familiar with, but I think they're kind of adapting it to be maybe even their own version of like a Game of Thrones epic fantasy. And even at Blaze, so Aqua Donkeys is a comedy film that you can watch on blazetv.com, and also The Reopening. That's a comedy that launched last year from Blaze. I'm very happy to see, you know, smaller studios, like I said, start to get into this. But I feel like sometimes when it comes to these movies, if we're being honest, especially when it's something like Lady Ballers, it's not necessarily the type of movie you would think is a good movie unless you're maybe ideologically on the same side, if that makes sense. Like, I don't know if we're nailing the quality yet.
We're not nailing the quality. With Lady Ballers, conceptually was a movie that you could have done normally in Hollywood 10 years ago and it could have been effing hilarious. Mm-hmm. Like a dodgeball kind of movie,
right?
I think it was good. It was good effort from people I don't think who have a lot of experience like making or writing. Maybe they do, but it just, yeah, it was like at the best there's a couple laughs, and I get, like I said, a little too long, by the way. Comedy's 90 minutes, that's it. Also, you know, make it a little, the editing needed to be tighter. The jokes need to be delivered a little better, but there was a concept there that could have been hilarious. So that's how you start. You got to try. They're not listening to me, but I would start the way Netflix started. I would just have other production companies make stuff and outbid A24 and don't make it super like, if you want to make a Western, like Westerns are pretty cheap. Like go for that. They did that with Gina. And they pulled off because they had, you know, Nick Searcy. Great. But I think it's in the early stages. You have to try. You have to start somewhere. And it's not going to be great. None of our first videos were great. When Alex Ross started out in grade school drawing, his crayon drawings weren't great. Steven Spielberg, like you have to start somewhere. But if I had investor money and I had a certain amount of time, I would definitely find other production companies to make the stuff and just buy it and not turn into kind of like the religious section of filmmaking. Like right, Angel Studio.
I mean, PurePlex already exists. That's already a thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like Angel Studios is out there and they're coming at definitely. It's called Angel Studios. It is. Right. They know what they are, but they are trying to like make, they're moving to the quality. Like there's always been Christian entertainment. It's always done pretty well. That's why there's a whole industry, but they're trying to step up. And I think they've done it. They got Sound of Freedom, you know? So try to get a movie like that, that maybe a bigger studio rejected over political reasons. Especially a no brainer like that one. That is that telling or what from Disney? That they reject. I mean, I know we've talked about it ad infinitum, but like, you really got to look back and think of, that's not a good look.
No.
The company that's accused of a lot of things rejected the movie about trafficking.
Right. And it's clear that they could say, oh, well, it's because we didn't think it would be like marketable or financially viable. Well, that's patently false. So either you're kind of groomers or you're just idiots.
Yeah.
Neither's a good look.
I think they're both. But no, I think long short, it's good that Daily Wire is trying. It is. And those who try the most fail the most. Right. But I think they should definitely just buy from production companies, because there are ones that are just putting out normal movies. They're just, and that's what Netflix does all the time. They put a bunch of stuff that's just average and it does okay, you know. And I would start that way and not become totally, because people want balance, you know. I've never asked for my politics are weird anyway, so I've like, my politics are pretty much, if you're watching a Western, that's my politics. Okay. So that I don't expect that in everything. I just want to be entertained, not preached at. That's all.
No, I think you're right. It's going to be kind of a journey. Hollywood's been doing this a long time. But I guess like my fear is that I don't want conservative media to just kind of become propaganda in film form for conservative audiences, because, you know, I look at something like Lady Ballers, and not that I think it's terrible, but I also like, objectively, if there were a movie based on, you know, a corresponding like left-wing principle, let's say that trans women are women, and it was just kind of about that, I know for a fact I would have hate reviewed, watched it, and called it propaganda, unfunny, not serious entertainment. So I guess I don't want us to become what we're criticizing. I just want good content. And I think comedy, actually, we mentioned that. I think that's a great avenue for the right or like conservative studios to kind of go into, because you can have a comic do a special and it's a low upfront cost, but you give them a bigger platform. And it's one of those areas where it doesn't necessarily need to be political, but because comedy now in certain spheres is so politically correct and so woke, there's that hunger for unfiltered, uncensored stuff. So I think that would be really, like, I would love to see Blaze pick up some comedy specials, because I think that's an area where you can set yourself apart from the mainstream without just being like, it's conservative comedy.
Yeah, and I think Blaze, like, at least has that in their brand now because of Dave Landau. They got, they got Normal World, so, which is not really a political show. It's more pop culture and stuff, so I think that opens it up, and I'm gonna check out that comedy, not just because Garrett's there, okay, but I think it would fit their brand more. And I would go for raunchy comedies, because Hollywood won't. I think that's the one market that I think is still out there that people love, is a good raunchy dumb comedy. I like, you know, I long for the days of Airplane with, you know, the slaps and Naked Gun. And they're going to remake the Naked Gun instead of doing like the most obvious comedy there is out there. You do the Blazing Saddles of the woke apocalypse of the last few years. And you just, it's the lowest hanging fruit. It's the easiest to make fun of. It would be hilarious. I mean, there's a whole cottage industry on freaking YouTube making fun of woke. Like, make a movie. Make my big fat woke movie, or whatever the hell you want to call it. I mean, there's a million ways you can approach making the Blazing Saddles just being a parody of woke Hollywood, woke corporatism, woke federal government, whatever you want to do. I mean,
we even saw like a small example of that, and it's succeeding very well with South Park Into the Panderverse.
Yes, absolutely. That there's your template right there. There's your template. And that was a huge hit. That was a massive hit. They're still, Disney's still reeling about it. We just had an article from Matthew Bellani, who said Kathleen Kennedy was for sure fired 2 years ago, is now saying that she's not the woke architect we think she is. Although her next show is going to be The Acolyte, about a bunch of lesbian Sith Jedi light scissoring each other. I'm not really sure. And the show is run by former Harvey Weinstein assistant Leslie Headland, who monetized witnessing abuse into a play and made herself the victim.
No, that is one of the shows that I'm so excited about, not because I think it's going to be good, because I think it's going to be terrible from everything we've seen, but I think it'll just be a sight to behold. The lengths that especially Lucasfilm is willing to go to show their ideological allegiance, knowing full well that this project will absolutely cost them money, because the Acolyte, I believe that concept, the Star Wars universe before the Jedi, you know, really taking it back, that started off in comics, if I'm not mistaken, they sold like 5 copies, but again, failing upwards. Now we have a series streaming on Disney Plus. Why does this keep happening? I'm also so excited about the participation of Amanda Stenberg, who is one of those activist actors, very, very woke. There's just so much about this that I cannot wait for. So definitely there's going to be one of those shows where you get a lot of reviews from our corner of the internet. Crazy Cat Kev, though, says, are we doomed? Will woke ever go away? It only seems to be getting worse, if you ask me, but I want to hear what you think.
We're not doomed. I'm not a black pillar. Those things are suppositories. we're not doomed because we have a lot of us fighting back. It's just going to be work. Our days of kicking back and relaxing and trusting the government to take care of things and sending our kids to a public school and not having to worry about it are over.
Yeah.
We can't do that anymore. But other than that, no, once we wake up and start doing the work, we're not doomed. Will woke ever go away? Not completely. No, but, it will become less prominent once things are decentralized. It will become far less prominent. It hasn't worked. There's 100, maybe thousands of YouTube videos alone that are a thesis on how this is a failure from many YouTubers, many great YouTubers that you can go back and watch. Now there's articles being written, and look, another industry is dying. You know, we got the music industry is so insignificant and dead. It's just basically Taylor Swift. And then, you know, your local band and everybody's, you know, segmented into, and this is fine. I kind of like it this way. You know, there's goths and death metal and all this stuff, and that's fine. But like when you have like the Scorpions doing a residency, which I just saw, by the way, and it was awesome. That's sad. And it's rad and sad all in the same thing. But, comic books are dead. The American comic book is dead. It is not alive anymore. It's a little zombie walking around. It's a little gay zombie walking around.
That's what's so sad, because I feel like comic books, that was an industry that fell even faster and harder than film or anything. And oftentimes, like, I'll be covering something with Marvel and I'll say like, oh, like gender bend this. And they'll be people like, actually, it's not woke. It's like this in the comics. It's like, yeah, because the comics are also woke.
Yes,
like that's where a lot of this starts.
It's in the comics. It was written within the last 2 years. It's like, no, yeah. Okay. So you're conflating the classic character of, we'll say, Robin, Tim Drake, Robin, been around for decades, liked girls for decades. Well, he's gay in the comics. Yeah, recently when they made everybody else gay, the comics that nobody read, the ones that people actually read, he was straight. They were better stories written by better creatives. That's what you should be basing it on. With Marvel, we're still getting Ironheart. We're still getting Agatha.
Ironheart, I think, is the perfect example of that. Like, oh, Iron Man is now like the character basically is going to be filled in by a black female. Well, it's in the comics. Like, no, it's in the comics, but the comics also suck. Like, that doesn't absolve this of criticism.
Yeah, you don't adapt like crappy comics, even the old ones, although those would be better than the ones there are today. And they sell in the thousands. Comic book stores are still closing at an alarming rate. The one thing that was working for them, back issues, have now kind of cratered because there was a CGC scandal. Also, what was helping the back issue market was movies and first appearances and stuff, and that's starting to fall apart. So back issue market starting to falter, and manga is absolutely dominating, like taking all of the market share. So you might as well just open a manga store at this point, because it's not a comic store. And we have a dead mall here in San Antonio that's near me, but it's awesome because it's been taken over by anime stores, manga store, multiple ones. It's got two radio controlled car tracks, like two different businesses in the same mall where you go in there with your radio controlled car and you race and you pay. Almost. And like, and then there's a giant Warhammer, like a place where you go and you paint your Warhammer and you play your games and stuff. And it's turned into the nerd mall. I mean, I don't know how long it'll last, but like, it's awesome. It, like I went in there. I'm like, oh my God, this is like heaven. What they didn't have, comic stores.
Yeah.
They had everything sad. Else but a comic store.
Well, speaking of manga, Isaac Martinez says, can we give a shout out to Japan for making amazing content from Spy X Family to Godzilla Minus One? Take notes, Hollywood. I think that's exactly right. I think, like I said, Hollywood had hubris in assuming that they were the only entertainment game around. But now not only are people gravitating toward video games, toward YouTube, you know, independent creators, but you also have like Asian cinema getting huge. Korean dramas are huge. Anime, more and more fans every year. Movies like Godzilla Minus One made in Japan and everything that are having like big theatrical releases in the United States. And also, can we talk about Godzilla Minus One being made on like $70 million? Hollywood, what are you doing?
A lot less than that. A lot less than that. It was made on $15 million.
15? I thought I saw 70.
15. No, 15. And
wow, that's even more shocking. Because so basically they're just laundering money in Hollywood, right?
Like they are laundering money. I even tweeted the other day, like every movie budget should be measured in how many Godzilla minus ones it costs. That's right. It. Like, Fallout, you're going to have to do the math, was $166 million. I mean, how many Godzilla minus ones is that? I mean, that's one episode is a Godzilla minus 11 one.
11 Godzilla minus ones?
Yeah. Yeah. So, yeah. And by the way, Epic, it's going to be on, I believe, digital within a week. So if you did miss it, it kind of sucks that you missed it. And hopefully they'll re-release it in the theater because there's a black and white version, which is great. There's a color version, which is great. And I believe it'll be on 4K soon, too. If you haven't seen it, best movie of the year by far. And manga, are they better? Manga is not better than old American comics. Sorry, manga fans, but it is much better than new American comics. I will give you that. I will give you that. But manga is also largely based on a lot of Western stuff. So,
and what I like about, so I've never been
in anime.
I'm never been into anime. I think it's, so I moved from Asia when I was like a tween. And then most of the people who would talk to me, because like I was the new weird kid, were weebs. I guess before I knew weebs were a thing, but it was off-putting how they would always ask me, oh, do you read this anime or manga or whatever? And so I developed a natural like, no, please like get away from me. I don't know what that is. Like, cause I'm from Hong Kong. I'm not Japanese. So there's my pre-existing bias against it, but I am starting to realize like, it's just regular content, and a lot of times I like the premises seem to be a lot darker than Western media is comfortable with, which I think is fun. So it is something where I'm trying to expose myself to more. I've heard Attack on Titan is really good. I've tried watching Castlevania that I thought was pretty good. I watched
I liked the first couple seasons of Castlevania. I watched that. That's when Warren Ellis was involved. I like there's a spin-off show right now called Parasite the Grey on Netflix. It's really fast-paced, like some of the most fat, like it's like, here's the story, we're gonna start, here's the character, you just met her, now we're halfway through the story. It's like, wow, that's crazy pacing. I will have to get used to it. But the anime that it's based on, a viewer sent it to me, it's freaking amazing. So it's Parasite the Maxim. Highly recommend that one. That one's really cool. So there are some that are like really well done. Like the animation is
right.
It's, you know, that was the tough thing for One Piece when I started watching it, was I had to kind of get used to the animation, but the storytelling is really good in One Piece too. But one that's more sophisticated that I think it's like a teen, it's got like teen angst, soap opera-y stuff with an alien threat. Parasite the Maxim, I like quite a
okay.
bit.
Okay, noted. Mataki, maybe a decade from now, people will buy a license of Schwarzenegger and create their own AI version of Terminator movie. So like you said, AI is terrifying, going to kill us all. But it is an interesting, like I've seen clips of the video AI generators now, and it is pretty amazing. I think with all the negative that's going to come from it, it is going to, if nothing else, empower a lot of creatives to make things that they might not otherwise have the resources to do. So
yeah, yes, agreed.
Yeah. Naruto 0076 says, I'm just curious how you would define woke. I know there are a growing number of people on both sides who say that woke means something I don't like, which makes the word meaningless. So there's a lot of different definitions. The way I always think of woke is that it's trying to use the Marxist conception of oppressor versus oppressed, but instead of focusing on the means of production or even economic social class, it's based on immutable characteristics like race, sexuality, and gender. So the idea that men oppress women, straight people oppress gay people, white people oppress brown people. So that to me is the woke worldview. And then what makes woke even more dangerous is that it seeks to correct this oppression using authoritarian means like DEI policies to artificially correct the injustices that they see. So that's my very limited way that I define woke. I don't know if you have something different that you kind of
use. Intersectionalism. You're absolutely right. It's based on a Marxist system. That's what woke is. And we commandeered the word because it used to mean like, hey, I'm waking up to the man, you know, and it wasn't necessarily oppressing us. It was, this was 20 years ago. It was the government's lying to us. And a lot of this is BS. That's what it used to mean. It doesn't mean that anymore.
Right. And I remember a while ago, The Haunting of Blythe Manor came out, and I liked the first The Haunting of Hill House a lot.
I did too.
But with Blythe Manor, I remember I didn't do a full review of it, but I mentioned that it was woke. So I stopped watching it, and I had people pushing back like, no, it's not woke. What are you talking about? The short story, the horror story that it's based off of does not have at its core a lesbian relationship. That's something that was added after the fact in the adaptation. So that is woke. You're taking like regular heterosexual on-screen representation, replacing it with lesbians. You can have a problem with it or not, but the fact that they're doing this to increase representation, which they view as necessary, like that is a woke concept at its core. Okay.
Agreed.
We'll finish these because I told you we'd go until one, but Maverick Pilgrim says, a fish doesn't know it's wet. Woke can't see woke. I largely agree with you. Albert Nada Retro. Hey, did you ever think you'd see the day Disney would teach boys their boundaries don't matter? Hashtag Thor, hashtag Zeus. That is true. And Albert Nada Retro again, got an HD UHF antenna and watched the classics on TV. Yeah.
Enjoy while you can.
So Gary, this has been so much fun. Thank you so much for taking the time to come and chat with us today. For people who want to keep up with you, follow you, know where and what you're doing, because in addition to, you know, your channel stuff, you guys also, you do live events and fan meetups. So where can they keep up with all of that?
Well, thank you for having me on, Lauren. It's always great to talk to you. We have to get you back on FNT.
We'll
have to be well-behaved a little bit. So you can find me on Twitter at Nerdrotics, on YouTube, just search Nerdrotic. We do Friday Night Tights every Friday. I do the Nooner. I'll probably do one later today. And Real BBC every other day. Also, our next event, not really sure. I know for sure, San Antonio in October, a hometown event for the Space Con. Gina Carano will be at the Space Con. That's towards the end of the year. But yeah, we just got back from Vegas and that was great. We love doing these live meetups. They're tons of fun.
Yeah, so cool. I hope one day that I'll have a time where I can set aside and go to one, because they always look like such a fun time. But you guys, thank you so much for tuning in, especially all of you lovely people in the live chat. And don't forget, we will see you next week here, Pseudo Intellectual Live on the Lauren Chen channel, or later on, wherever you get your podcasts. Thanks so much for tuning in, guys. Until next time.